But tactically, if I shut the water off, let's just say I had water in my basement. If I shut the water off and I drain it, right? And there's no more water in the basement, whether I get a mitigation company to cut out the drywall right now or in a week, technically you can have mold, so you got to be careful. But like, it's already damaged. So like, if you had a fire and they're like, well, we're going to send a mitigation company to mitigate what? The whole house is damaged. It's got to be gutted. What are you going to mitigate, right? So you have to be careful when doing it. And when you call your agent, you know, every agent's got friends. Oh yeah, my buddy, he owns that restoration company. He'll be out there tomorrow or today, right? And everyone just signs these work authorizations. There's no pricing on it. There's no amounts. So you sign these contracts. You don't know what you're signing. All you're signing is what we charge is what the insurance pays. And if the insurance doesn't pay it, Ruben owes us for that.
Who's this? Oh, you're an entrepreneur? Oh, you're a real estate investor? Oh, you're trying to learn from those who did it? Well, come into the lab then. Put your white coat on, gloves on, notepad, and let's build, y'all. Real estate experiment. What is happening, y'all? Today, guys, I brought the white coat out because you know when I have a unique individual that comes into the lab, I got to bring out the lab coat because I'm going to be taking notes all day. I have a gentleman today by the name of Andy Gerchak, who is going to be the source of information that we've all been geeking out about. We've been talking about midterm rental insurance for a long time, but there is nothing like going straight to the plug, the one who's engaging on both sides. He is the founder and CEO of All City Adjusting, a licensed public adjusting firm, which is very different than what we've been talking about in the lab, because we've been talking about the relocation companies and the adjusters of the insurance companies, which is very different than what Andy does today. So without further ado, I want to welcome Andy of All City Adjusting to the lab. Andy, what is happening, brother? How are you doing today?
Ruben, thank you so much for having me. It's all good. The sun's coming out, so perfect time to shoot a podcast with you. So.
Absolutely. And listen, I like to get this, you know, I don't like to talk too much offline.
I wish I knew about the coat, though. I would have wore some kind of lab coat, too, if I knew there was a...
Oh, don't worry. I'm hosting, brother. Don't worry. It's all good. But no, the lab is funny that you said that, because we were talking offline. You know, you said, hey, I really like, you know, what you got behind Experiment, Fail, and Repeat. And, you know, the thing is with the lab, it's just that. It's everything's an experiment. But my idea is, why don't I bring in folks like yourself who have done the experiment so that we can have a proof of concept, just like in the lab, and have a lab report, for lack of better words, to then be able to execute on, right? And so, you know, having you in the lab, I told you this off the air, like I'm geeking out. I'm so excited because I want to hear it from the source, someone who's on the other side. And this is live experiments that we're doing in the lab. You guys know if you're weren't on because we just got on the air, is I was talking with offline with Andy about kind of what we've done on the temporary housing side, working with insurance companies and their policyholders and giving them a home and a place to live in. But who we've been working with has been the relocation companies, because the insurance companies, they don't just do it themselves. They don't relocate the families themselves. They work with the insurance companies, and then it has to go through their adjuster, and then we get approved, all that. But you're coming from a whole different angle, and I want to at least get a little bit of background before we get into the meat and potatoes of all this, because I think I truly believe that a business is, I say this all the time, you're a reflection of the business, right? And your business reflects who you are. So if I were to meet you, Andy, you know, in the airport, or, you know, we're sitting next to each other, and ask you, hey, Andy, what do you do for a living? What do you tell people that you do? And what is it that you do?
Yeah, it's a lot of explaining because most people don't know our industry. So it's pretty simple. I just usually lay it out that, you know, we advocate for the insured on all insurance claims, especially large loss is kind of our specialty. We represent them. We take them from start to end, and we maximize the claim in all aspects and all kind of coverages they have. And same thing with, you know, with ALE and housing. That's something we help and we handle. So when I kind of read your background, sorry to get off topic, but when I read your background and kind of read with the housing and stuff, I was like, wow, this is very, you know, this is something that we do all the time. I've been around it for over 10 years. So I'm, you know, It's very geek. I'm geeked out because I'm like, oh, someone actually understands part of that thing.
Well, it's one of those things, Andy. Like, if you know, you know. And this is, I think, people are you know, there's midterm rentals, and then our niche is midterm rental insurance. So, like, when I saw, you know, you come in and that you were going to come on the show, I was super excited. But before we even get into that, let's talk about you. And you said you've been doing this for 10 years. How did you even get into this space? And obviously, let's get into more of, you know, what it really means, who you are helping, who is the avatar that you're helping. Yep. But how did you even get into this space? Like, what was before All City Adjusting? Who were you? What were you doing?
Yeah, I was in sales. I was in construction for a long time, had my own construction company, was doing, you know, all kinds of work. Then was doing fire restoration as well, and kind of restoration work. And then I met a PA that was in the industry for a long time. He ended up taking me and mentoring me and kind of teaching me the entire industry. He was the first African-American public adjuster in the state of Illinois. And he had over 40 years of experience that he taught me in about 3 years. And so kind of everything fell in. I mean, I met him on site. I called him for like 2 years. I was kind of persistent on like, hey, can you help me out? Can you teach me? And, you know, he kind of kept blowing me off. But after 2 years, he finally was like, you know what? This guy won't stop. So then he's like, okay, come on, I'll show you.
Oh my God. So, I love that. Gives me the goosebumps because, like, you talk about the instant gratification that people have. Like, oh, I want it now. Like 2 years. Yeah. That is the process.
I literally started another business. I was about to, we started a wholesaling business and I sent out my yellow letter. I was getting calls, and as I was, that was kind of just started out, I was like, you know, I'll give him a call one last time. And kind of, if he doesn't answer or he doesn't, you know, want to help me out, I'm just going to, you know, delete him and I'm done. And he actually answered. He's like, hey, let's meet up tomorrow. And from then, it's history. So,
okay. So let me ask you, man. So what you've, and I love this because there's a process behind it. That's why I love asking that question. Construction, wholesaling, sales. What opportunity did you see? Like, why did you call this gentleman? I believe it's Herb Johnson, right? Why did you call Herb for that long? Like, what did you see then that was so clear to you as to why you wanted to get into the space?
I was already in construction restoration. I knew that industry. I kind of it wasn't something I loved. I like working with my hands, don't get me wrong. But when I met Herb, or when I saw him first on a job site, because I was working for a gentleman back then when I actually saw or met Herb, then my boss explained to me what he does. He's like, yeah, he's the one that actually, you know, got this client paid and did all this. And I'm like, wow, he's like, can I have his number? Like, I want to call him because I want to learn what he does. And I was just so interested about it. Then I started doing more research and kind of, you know, doing some more background. I'm like, yeah, this is kind of what I want to do. You know, instead of, I like the industry. I didn't like the restoration part, the construction part. There's sales involved with it. You know, there's what we do is you have to interpret policies and understand stuff and be able to negotiate. So all that stuff kind of, interested me. So
then you went for it as a shift, as a pivot. Okay. So I want to make sure I understand. Maybe you can clear it up for us because I'm still not clear and I want to understand. So who is it that you serve and what are you doing for them? Like, give us a case study.
Correct. So we help the insured, right? The person that has the insurance policy, the person that's filing the claim against the insurance company. So the insurance company will have their own adjuster, whether he's a staff or independent, and the insured hires us. And then we're hired to maximize the claim, to handle the claim from beginning to end. And not only are we maximizing and getting every penny for our client, it's that kind of taking that claim so it doesn't get delayed, so it's not going to get denied, right? So it's kind of moving through a process because that where the industry is going, more claims are getting denied, more claims are getting delayed, and it just gets, you know, most people don't know because they don't see it from the side we see it from, but we see it where it's going, and you know it's only going to get harder. And I actually have a claim on my own property that I tried dealing with as a homeowner, not through our company. Nightmare. Had to just turn around and it's a nightmare.
So what, why is that? So from what I understand, if we focus on the single family side, you know, because that's what most folks are familiar with, and I think that's what we've really been talking about is water, and this happened to us, so I can speak from experience, right? Basement floods, or, you know, for we had a client where a tree fell on their home, and so now it's, they need to be displaced for, and they need to get that fixed. What is the pushback from the insurance company? Like, what is justifiable? Is it that we don't have enough time? There's too many things on the desk. Is it that actually, you know what? No, this doesn't fall underneath policy. Like, what do you see as the biggest pushback of claims getting rejected, and why?
Yeah. That's an open loaded question. There's a lot to answer there. In terms of ALE, since you guys and your listeners, it's a lot of the housing. When the tree falls on that house or someone has damage, the first thing they say, though, just so wants to fight is, well, they have a kitchen, they could cook in there. Yeah, but they don't have half, you know, their three bedrooms. They only have one bedroom left, or, you know, they only have one bath. Well, they can still cook. Like, they'll always revert to back to that. Well, they can still cook. Yeah, but, I mean, you're going to have, the house is not livable, right? So they'll push back on that.
So that's the insurance company who you're paying every single month.
100%. Right?
And they're pushing back because obviously it's a money thing, right? They don't want to fork out money that they don't have to. Is that what you're saying here?
Yeah. So you have to think about it like this. There's the agent who sells you the policy, right? And he's the great guy. He's or the lady, the female, whoever it is that's selling you this policy, right? They're great. They're friends, or you probably know them. And everything goes well until you file a claim. Right. And then you call your agent, and your agent wants to be involved, but they can't because they've taken all that power from the agent. And the agent is just a salesperson these days, and which is nothing wrong with that, but that's all they are. So they don't know what happens behind the scenes. So now you have, and you got to think of the insurance company as a business, right? They sell policies. Then when they have claims, they can't just be paying out all these claims. So the strategy now is, if they can delay it, underpay it, and most people will accept that offer, you know, or just take the money. I was literally just on a podcast with the host who had a loss, and he said, you know, he knew he got too little, but he didn't have time, so he just took the money. And he was right. He went, after he did the repairs ended up being double.
Wow.
So you know, that's who you're dealing with. And remember, you're talking about $1 billion industries, companies.
Right.
They're huge.
They have money.
You're going to go. And so these adjusters get, you know, there's bonuses, there's incentives, you know, and even if there wasn't incentives to underpay or delay claims, there is that, well, I have 20 claims. I'm just going to write up whatever I can, you know, hand it in, and I'm done, because, again, they're overworked. So, I mean, there's so many different scenarios, so many different stories.
So this is interesting. So, and this makes sense. And for those of you who are not familiar, so ALE Solutions, we work with them. That's just an example. They're a temporary housing relocation provider. So and I speak to them every day. They'll go on Furnish Finder. They'll go on Zillow Rental Manager. They'll go in their database. They will place people. Now, Andy, let's talk about the elephant in the room, because it didn't even occur to me until you said this. And it didn't occur to me until, I think I caught this in one of the emails somehow, that, like, well, obviously they have their markup, right? Like, correct. They're not doing this for free. So, but what they typically would tell us, who are the homeowners who have properties, and we say, hey, what's your nightly rate or daily rate? And we name it, or monthly rate, and we name it, and we know to mark up high because we know these companies have money. They'll come back and say the adjuster didn't approve it. But is it true, Andy, that it's not just the adjuster, that there's also a markup they're factoring into that amount?
Correct.
Is that true?
Correct, because Housing Solutions has to make money. So they put you – so basically they find the person that owns the property, they add their markup, and then they provide it to the adjuster.
Do we know what that markup is by any chance? Like, I obviously know so that it's going to be different, but is there a ballpark?
So hold on. We just had one. I wish I had Ashley in here. She just had a scenario where the adjuster, the client had a fire, and ALE Solutions, I think he approved them for 27 or yeah, 2,800 or something like that. And then, you know, we called and said, hey, you know, we found them housing and stuff. He's like, well, I'm only approving it for 25. So he told us he's approving the insured for only 2,500, you know, a month, but he approved ALE for 27 or 2,800.
So they're getting that spread of a $300 a month.
That's what it on that one. That's what it looks like. Now it could be more on others, and I'm not sure. You know, that's their margins. They're great. Again, nothing like they're no, they're no, no. Great
by
company.
The way, like, with them. Yeah, yeah. Like this is not to. I think Alish Solutions is like when you think about it, it's easier to talk about. Like you think soda, you think Coca-Cola, you think Pepsi.
Correct.
But I don't want.
They're one of the biggest. To, correct.
Yeah, yeah. So to the listeners, this is not to like pinpoint one company. I think it's just to give some context when people think of relocation companies. There's a ton out there. There's tons of local ones. Yeah. And we work with Ailey. They're great to work with, but we're just trying to understand or at least educate the listeners here of like how this process works and how everybody eats. Right. And at the same time, understand where the bottleneck might be and why there might be some pushback. But I wanted to talk about the middle of the funnel because there's sometimes you overlook that. And I know it's easy to put the scapegoat on the adjuster, but let's also talk about the markup too that's factored into what you're communicating with me, right? Right, Andy?
Correct. I mean, it's not like they said, oh, Ruben's offering, you know, $2,000 a month. Obviously, they had to mark it up. Now, if they offered your price, it might have went through.
Exactly.
And again, the reason you can charge more because this is short term. This is not long term. You're not signing a lease for a month. You're putting someone in your home for 3 months, 6 months. It's short term, and you have to provide them everything. So, you know, you're not technically you're charging more than you would maybe monthly, but the house is short term, and it's already has everything that person that walks in has all the stuff that they can, you know, go on with their lives.
Yeah,
it's not an empty house.
Yeah. And another thing, Andy, I'm so glad you went there because it kind of opens up the other thing is the way we look at this is the alternative is and I would love for you to give insight on this because this is how I see it. But I know you have lens on this. You've been doing this for 10 years. So we're so happy to have you here. 10 years plus. My understanding, Andy, and you correct me if I'm wrong, is that the alternative is much more expensive, right? When you have a family of five with two dogs, you got to think about, you know, kennel fees. You got to think about, oh, they don't have a backyard. You got to think about the hotel might not be pet friendly. Like, have you seen a discrepancy when you think about the opportunity of putting someone in a hotel suite versus a single family home?
Yeah. I mean, that's they're usually really quick about putting insured in a home because the hotel is double, if not triple. Because those suites, again, you provide them a kitchenette or you provide them, you know, a suite, those start adding up. Those are 300, 400, a, you know, a day, you know? So, you know, 400 a day times 10 days, well, that's already $4,000. Whereas a home, even if it's for 2 months, is only going to cost $8,000. Or much less. So it's huge. And I'll tell you what, when I was doing restoration, there was a couple of clients where we did the housing for in terms of where we found the home. We then went and rented a center. We rented everything, furnished it, and got everything ready, and then made that, you know, whatever we decided what our amount was, and we provided that directly to the insurance company without going to ALE housing and just provided that strictly to the adjuster.
So again, you're like just nailing it with the transitions here. Is that tips like it for someone like me, let's say, or someone like who might be listening, they have one home or maybe they have two homes. Do the insurance companies even entertain talking to a homeowner, or do you have to be a manager that has a large portfolio? Like, how realistic is it for Joe Schmo next door to be able to go directly to like Allstate? Like, who am I speaking to?
Yeah. Right? So you're not going to Joe Schmo is not going to go directly to Allstate, but there is avenue. So now let's say you do have housing. Well, you can contact or stop by each local agent because the agent usually is the first person that gets the call. And the agent could say, hey, I have a friend that has a house. And then all you are is you're providing the lease to the insured, and the insured is then turns the lease and turns it into the carrier, to the adjuster. And then the adjuster could call you directly and discuss it. So if you want to get on that topic of, for your listeners, people that do have homes, like agents are great. Restoration companies are great contacts because they're usually one of the first, or mitigation companies, right? The local Surf Pro, they're the first ones at the property. So Surf Pro can be, oh, you need a house? Ruben has two. Let me see if he's got any available.
Wow. That's huge. Now, obviously you're here. So you've kind of painted the picture. Hey, like, yeah, you're paying for this policy, but when push comes to shove and money talks, you might not be able to get, you know, what you're supposed to get. So let me ask you, is it, when I look at, from what I understand, right, in our industry, we look at coverage D, right? Additional living expenses, loss of use. Am I not eligible for that? Like, what are they looking at that I might not, that makes, that gives them the power to say no?
Correct. So there is no if you have 50,000 in coverage, I mean, there is no like nothing in the policy that states this house can't be this and you can't spend this much on a house. Nothing. Depends on the adjuster. Literally, they just make up their own, you know, they have their own guidelines. Each adjuster is different. Some adjusters approve it with no problem. Some have a something, it's their dollars, and they literally don't want, you know, it's like, you know, for every penny, you feel like he's pulling it out of his own pocket. But in terms of that, I just lost my train of thought on that. But yeah, it depends. There is no really guideline. What it does says though, you can't be in a better situation. So if you have a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, you know, they're not gonna approve to put you in, you know, Ruben's house that's got 10 bedrooms and that's right. So it's to maintain the same living that you had before the loss happened.
Okay, got it. And so I'm gonna pull out this case study and let me know what you think, because then you're more qualified to do this, and you let me know if this is what you do. I had a homeowner, and again, I'm not a PA the way you are, right? But I was just trying to solve a problem. I'm not a public adjuster, but I want to hear how you would have gone about it and how you are able to help a policy owner in this case. I had a gentleman who booked on Airbnb for his family for 10 days. He let me know what's water damage. I already knew right away that that's going to be extended. And so then he wanted to extend, and I think our rate at the time was maybe like $235 a day or something like that. And then I told him that, you know, there's a lot of fees on Airbnb. You're welcome to book direct. We work with this all the time. Like, it's completely kosher, right? And so he then reached out. He got an extension for 30 days. Then when it came to the 30 days, right, get this, Andy, his adjuster tells him that he's only eligible for $115 a day. And I'm like, hold on, my dude. Sorry, but like, this is a 4-bedroom in a great neighborhood here in Georgia. And our home is, again, fully stocked. Wi-Fi is on. You know, amenities, utilities are turned on. You've been living there. And the rate, I already discounted you. And now you're telling me for the extension, it's like half the price. So I'm like, put me in touch with your adjuster for a second. So I got on a call with him and I told him, yeah, he's like, yeah, well, I got another house for like $3,500. I'm like, well, I understand, but, you know, before I get there, sorry, I left a part. I asked the homeowner, I'm like, have you looked at your insurance policy? Like, what does it say? It's like, no, I don't know what that is. Like, people don't know, right? They don't look at these things. No one looks.
No one. And
then, you know what he told me? He told me that in that section for recovery D, it says unlimited.
Okay. A 12-month sustain, you know, 12-month sustain or whatever. Sometimes there's no limit, correct?
So now I'm like, okay, hold on, Andy. Like, tell me what's going on here. And I think you started telling this, like, on one side, it's unlimited on paper, but then on the other side, the adjuster is cutting that fee in half. And I got back to him. I'm like, listen, you're not – good luck finding another home like this. Text me back in 20 minutes. He's like, $200 a day approved. I'm like, Andy, what the hell was that about? We went from cutting that in half, telling the client that that's his budget, and then because I got in touch with him, you know, then he approved it. Now I want to hear – what would you have done? Because this is where you make your bread and butter. Like,
you just act like a PA. I'm super proud. That's awesome. I wish more people did that. But you see, but everyone's so afraid to ask. But this is exactly what, as I was stating before, is they offered you a lower amount, and they always say this, right? This, now they told you this for ALE. Think about this. We get this for coverage A, you know, for a structure, for contents, and it's always, well, we know a guy, and we have a company that can do it for less. We're here to put the insured back to pre-loss condition to make sure they are in the same kind of lifestyle and you know, as they were before the loss. Not because anything less is bad faith, right? You're not indemnifying the insured, but that's what they do. And if people don't have a PA on their side or someone like you that just called, they would have been, you know, you know, thrown in some house, and you know, it is what it is. And then churn is, hey, they get away with it.
Wow. Experiment Nation, you've heard the word MTR, midterm rentals, as it is currently a hot topic and hot commodity right now, because again, there has been an increase in short-term rental regulations, and there also has been, let's face it, a slowdown in what we were experiencing a couple years back when it comes to bookings. So with that said, short-term rental operators are looking for alternative solutions to tap into the midterm rental space. However, there is a space, there is a sub niche of midterm rental insurance that I'm truly excited about, that I want to share with you, that the experience that we've had, the tremendous results we've been able to have, and that's the insurance midterm rental space, which is very different than your traditional midterm rentals. When you think of traditionally midterm rentals, you think of travel nurses. There is a space, midterm rental insurance space, that we've tapped in, where you need to be well connected with insurance and relocation specialists and companies, and understand the right type of asset required for you to be able to help these families. What's really important that stands out the most, which you can get in what I'm about to offer you, is the understanding where to be found by these insurance companies, how to properly manage your calendar so that your listings are optimized so that they can find you, how to actually gain traction and build a relationship with these relocation insurance companies. I've put together an MTR insurance blueprint, that's MMTRRR insurance blueprint, to cover these foundations after we've had success landing very large contracts on single family homes that literally 4x what we traditionally make in long-term rentals, and also gives us peace of mind because there's less turnover and 100% occupancy, because these contracts can start anywhere from 30 days to 3 months to 8 months, and range anywhere from, again, we've landed anywhere from $8,000 to $9,000 a month in per month on a single family home property, which our mortgages are typically around the $2,400 range, which then gives you a large spread of anywhere from $4,000 to $6,000 net on just one property. And this is why it's very hot right now. But people who haven't been in the lab with individuals like myself, like Jesse Vasquez and Dr. Rachel Gainsborough and Noble Crawford, don't have the foundations and don't know exactly where to start. And therefore, this is why I'm giving you guys a blueprint, the MTRR insurance blueprint. Go to the website, experimentrealestate.com, and get yourself a blueprint to completely change, or at least have a plan B if you're a short-term rental operator looking to maximize your occupancy and profitability. We'll see you on the other side. That is, I'm like still trying to digest that. So, Andy, I don't know that people know that you exist. If people don't know that they have their coverage D section, which you maybe look at once you sign your mortgage and then you completely forget that that even exists. How do you time this? You built a whole company doing this. Like, where do you fit into the customer journey, and how do people get in touch with you? Like, how do I even know to contact you? How do you get in front of the customer? I'm so curious.
So this is so if you want to get into like the behind the scenes of building, you know, our company and building everything we've built, it's hard because you're trying to educate people, right? Mm-hmm. People aren't, you know, when you start, let's say, a construction business, you can do some research of what people are looking for. You know, people are going to be looking for bathroom remodelers or whatever. You can kind of market. With us, it's like, okay, well, what are you marketing? No one's looking for public adjuster. You know, they're kind of searching like help with claim and stuff like, you know, it's, so you're trying to educate people. So we had to, we spent a lot of money on marketing over the years, to be like the you know, front of the line of Google, of public adjusters online, so we can kind of educate, you know, write blogs, videos, and now, you know, we even hired one of our interns from last year to come in and kind of run the social media aspect and put out more videos and more content, because people don't know. And sometimes the worst part is when they call you and it's too late. Right. I had a claim. It was this much time. I got denied. Let me see the deal. And it's like, and you read everything and you're like, holy smokes, we would have prevented all this. But now it's got to go to an insurance. Go ahead.
No, no. Okay, I'll let you finish your thought. Now it's got to go. What's the next escalation?
To an attorney. Right now it's legal. Now it has to go to legal if you want to overturn a denial from an insurance company.
Really? Wow. Okay. So, Andy, you're saying so many good things. So I want to pinpoint a few things. So once my claim gets denied, I can't, what's the word I might be looking for?
You can overturn it. I mean, you can rebut it. You can. But to rebut a denied claim is very difficult. It's very difficult. I mean, trust me, we try. There's some we do, but really hard. I mean, that they've already done all the research. They've already have all the facts, and here's the denial. So you really have to have a good case. Now, if they don't want to move to it, like we had one where it was denied, you want a case study? An insured is selling a house, right? They have their primary house. And they have a rental across the street that their son lives in that they rent to him. And then they have another rental in Texas, right? So they're selling their house. So because they're selling it, they're like, okay, well, we're going to move to Texas. So they kind of, started packing their stuff and they just moved in and they cleaned up the house for the agent, you know, because he was showing it. And they went to live with their son across the street. You know, they got denied for a $250,000 fire loss, we estimated. Because they said that it wasn't their primary resident, that they moved out like that. There's more details to it, but that's, yep.
No. Okay. This is so interesting. So it's the devil's in the details, right?
So I tried, that denial, I fought tooth and nail to just get it overturned, to get that adjuster to see like, hey, no. And there's nothing you could do. So then you have to bring in an attorney and then, you know, the attorney's like, yeah, this is a case. This is one that should have been paid.
Okay. So I heard you say a keyword because I listen closely when I got a guy like you here in the lab, right? I'm taking notes. You said facts, right? And you said preventative if before the claim is filed. And I'm going to set this question up with a little bit of an experience that I had with the flooding where I was talking to restoration company. I'm so sorry. Restoration.
You're good.
Yeah. Restoration. That's my French coming out. And they told me it was almost like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge situation where, and the reason I understood what they were saying, right? When someone's talking to you and they're like, hey, this is probably what you're going to want to say.
Yeah. Don't say flood or
right? Water. Yeah. It was something like tissue, something like clog. It was just like,
It was soft. You want it soft
tissue.
soft tissue clog, yeah.
This is an unbelievable niche. Because what you say will be held against you, right? Is that what you're really saying?
Can we just stop right there, what you just said? What you say is going to be held against you is literally why if you don't have a PA like right in the front or you don't have an attorney or someone, you are just walking into a gunfight with night, like there's people surrounded with guns and you're just walking in. Like you don't understand because they're taking all the notes. So every denial we go into, we look at it, we're like, if we just had this claim, all this would have been avoided because we would have filed it the right way. We would have used the right terms. And and an insured, Ruben, when you called your insurance, the agent was your friend that you got insurance through, and they're super nice when you call in. So you just want to be nice and you want to tell them everything about your day and all your history. And then all of a sudden you're like, why am I getting denied? And they're like, well, you said this and this, and then this and this is not covered. So, the soft clog, we had a client that was denied, actually is an investor as well. And that has his own show. Maybe you know him, Tyler Sheff. Actually, I can't even refer to him because he was on his podcast. But he had a claim where it was denied. And, it was denied because he didn't have the coverage. And then we went in, we did all the facts. We talked to this plumber, wrote a report. And because they worded it under the wrong definition, that when we took it, and then got it and provided there was this was the loss, the soft tissue clog, it got paid 70 grand. So that one was denied and then it got paid 70. And then I went on his podcast because he's like, I got to have you on.
Wait, okay, this is so good. And I love that this is kind of a great segue. Like, I it's important for people to understand your value as well, because for me, you know, when you have a hammer, you know, everything looks like a nail. But when you have different tools on your tool belt in your lab, right, that's the goal, you know who to call. You know, one of my favorite books right now is Who Not How, right? And a lot of people are focusing on the how. I want to think about the who. When do I call Andy? So the next question I want to ask, you talk about the technicality, what you say can be used against you. When I get a call, and we've gotten that call, it's not a fun call. Yeah, like there's a bunch of water down here. Who do I call first?
Public adjuster. Right? Honestly, because the public adjuster will tell you if it's covered, what's the loss. They'll be able to tell you if you should just call the mitigation company, or hey, call the, you know, a good PA. Like, they'll tell you exactly what to do to make sure, even if it's not a, even if you're not going to file. Like, if we have our clients call us, and I'll say, like, you know, we have one guy that literally he wants to file a claim for everything. And I have to sit down with them and say, we're not going to file a claim for this because you're not going to get paid. Or you're going to get, you know, so, but that's what a good public adjuster will do. And then he'll tell you, hey, call a mitigation. And so some people will call the mitigation first. Then they get a bill for $20,000, just like we have clients. They call us, they're like, boy, I was denied and I have this bill though from the mitigation. It's like 50 grand. It's like 20 grand. Because the mitigation company doesn't care. They're going to do the work. They're going to build the insurance. If the insurance doesn't pay, well, Ruben, come on, buddy, hand over the money. They don't, you know. It, so we'll make sure, like, what I always do is make sure that the client, they're like, well, I want to call. I want to start mitigating. Go ahead. But if they don't pay, do you have the money to fork over to the mitigation company? But then the insurance company can turn around and say, well, you didn't mitigate, right? So there's like a double-edged sword. So we, yes. So then you know, you have to make sure that, like on the situation with the basement, I would say, okay, well, I'm not sure if this is going to get covered. We have to be careful. You know, get the water drained out. Do the minimal. Mitigate it, but do the minimal, because if it doesn't get covered, well, then you're on a hook. So we want to make sure you're covered first. Mm-hmm. And if it is covered, then we'll get you all that money and then you could go hire someone.
And I love that you said that. And like, just because I've been in that situation, I know what you're talking about. And I want to highlight it to our listeners if you missed it. It's, you know what Andy just said, and Andy, please correct me if I'm saying anything that's incorrect, is when you speak to at that point it's your agent, I guess, right? And you tell them you're trying to file a claim, you're telling them, hey, you know, I got a flood, etc. They're gonna ask you these questions about, hey, you know, what did you solve the problem, right? And this is where you got to be very, very careful of you know, yes, having. They want to see that you took all the measures as a homeowner to prevent the issue from their point of view of costing more dollars, right?
Correct.
Is that right?
Correct. That is 100% correct. That is, you know, prevent further damage. But tactically, if I shut the water off, let's just say I had water in my basement. If I shut the water off and I drained it, right, and there's no more water in the basement, whether I get a mitigation company to cut out the drywall right now or in a week, technically you can have mold, so you got to be careful. But like, it's already damaged. So like, if you had a fire and they're like, well, we're going to send the mitigation company to mitigate what? The whole house is damaged. It's got to be gutted. What are you going to mitigate?
Yeah.
Right? So you have to be careful when doing it. And when you call your agent, you know, every agent's got friends. Oh yeah, my buddy, he owns that restoration company. He'll be out there tomorrow or today, right? And everyone just signs these work authorizations. There's no pricing on it. There's no amounts. So you sign these contracts. You don't know what you're signing. All you're signing is what we charge is what the insurance pays. And if the insurance doesn't pay it, Ruben owes us for that.
Yeah. And another thing that you said that is key is the language that they're putting on that work order as well. That can come back to bite you. So there's a, wow, this is incredible. I mean,
and again, don't get me wrong. Restoration companies are awesome and they're needed. We work with them all the time.
Yeah.
But you have to be careful which ones, because a lot of them, and not that there's bad ones, there's bad in every industry or good in the industry. And again, they're just doing their job. If you call them to come out, they don't care whether the insurance, they're not dealing with the insurance. They're going to come and do what they have to, and that's it. And who pays for it, they don't really care. Mm-hmm. So you have to be careful. So there's a right time to call them and get them involved. But we don't advise. You call a PA and have one on your team. You call them right away as soon as something happens. What's 5 minutes of a call to say, hey, don't file, or hey, do it this way?
It's crazy, because you know, you start thinking about you know, when you become a very savvy investor and you start thinking about the people you need on your team, you know, called my CPA the other day before making, you know, a move, right? Yeah. You know, it sounds like you must have this person on your team. And I'm so glad you're here because, you know, you hear this person, you hear that CPA, you hear that insurance, all that, but we don't hear it often. And I think we ought to, because it's not a matter of, if when you're in this space, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when you're going to need one, and you're going to know, you're going to want to have someone to call, and you want to make sure it's the right person that you call when shit hits the fan, for lack of better words. Right.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, and we're thinking like, excuse me, I also understand the insurance industry's view on it. Right. Cause if we have a client that calls and we walk in and, you know, he's a slumlord, doesn't care, water's leaking everywhere, we're not going to take the claim, or we're going to say we're not helping you, because you know the insurance company owes you for sudden damage. But if you're just trying, not taking care of your properties, water's running everywhere, well, you know, that's why the insurance company then kind of gets into this where, hey, we're going to investigate each claim and try, you know, it. So I you could see it from their standpoint of why kind of they're handling the claims they are. So, but you definitely, having a PA is, not having one is like not having an attorney.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, because as you kept, like, you know, as you're speaking, it's like, that's what I think of. It's like an attorney in your real estate kind of portfolio. And it's, right? Like, I mean,
it's a CPA, it's the real estate attorney. Why wouldn't you? It doesn't cost you anything. It's not like you have to have a retainer like an attorney for advice. It's free to call and ask questions.
So tell me, how do you monetize? Because I think the reason I asked this question, and I asked this question across the board, I think you should be educated to know how your agent gets monetized, makes their money, your insurance, because once you understand how someone makes a living, you can also understand the whole, okay, like, is this fiduciary? Is it not? Correct. Is there a possible conflict of interest? And I think it's important to highlight that to our listeners, because you should know. I'm not one to actually not ask that. So let's talk about your business model. How do you keep the lights on? How do you keep this thing going? How do you actually build a profitable company the way you've done so that our listeners are aware?
Yeah. Standard fee for us on the claim where we get going right from the beginning, where we're the first ones, you know, when we get called in right away, is 10%. So, and that's contingent, right? So we work for free. You technically take a claim and, you know, negotiate it, maximize it, and then we get paid at the end. Once everything is done, the insured gets paid, that's when we get paid. So everything is kind of contingent. So a lot of claims we take, let's say if you called us, Ruben, 6 weeks or 6 months went by, you're delayed, you still haven't gotten any money, well, then we might look at it and it's going to be 15-20%, right? Because now we're taking a chance. What have you told them for 6 months? What have you provided them? There's a chance we're going to spend 2 months working this claim, and they're going to say, hey, it's denied because Jalen or Ruben said this and this, and we didn't know about it. Mm-hmm. We just had a claim. The adjuster came out. If the adjuster comes out, pays for the entire roof system. It's $1 million claim. I agree with us. Everything's on point. Great. So we get a call a month later that they're sending out like engineer, and they're sending out these people. So I call the adjuster that we met on site, and he says, hey, I submitted everything we talked about. So I called the adjuster. I called the adjuster that's the desk adjuster, right, that's kind of handling the entire claim. And I said, you know, what's going on? And he goes, Andy, do you know they filed a claim 6 months before you? Like, I am not aware. He's like, yeah, they had a PA. They came out. You know, we only noted this damage. And this was 6 months before. He's like, so within the 6 months that they had their other PA, there wasn't any So now I'm just like, oh, wow. So there's this whole scenario of, well, we didn't know about it. So now we wasted all this time and all this teamwork, and we don't get paid for it, right? So we don't charge on that because it's all contingent. And we didn't do – so now that falls back on us. We didn't do our due diligence on asking the right question and getting the right story from the client.
So in other words, you're saying that for that work, you're saying the other PA was going to get paid.
Well, he wouldn't, because, well, that other PA, whatever he did, he didn't get the claim paid. He basically got it. He got paid for like, they didn't pay for anything. It was under the deductible. So he ruined that claim. Whatever he did, it just screwed up everything. Cause if that claim never was filed with that PA or he never did anything, the claim was, we had it paid.
Oh my gosh. So, Andy, do you represent me the way an agent would? You know, when I say agent, I think of buyer agent, like talking to the other selling agent. Or do you guide me on what to say? Do you help me write things? Like, where, you know, how do you operate? You know, we started talking about the compensation. That's very helpful. What is it that you're doing for me and how does that lay out?
That's a great question. No, we handle, so when we get hired, we take over the claim process, right? We send in our letter of rep to the insurance, letter of representation to the insurance company, and then we're the only ones discussing everything. So
wow,
when
that, so you when become the so homeowner.
We are the homeowner. Correct. We are basically represented like an attorney would be, right? Where, hey, we're taking the claim. They're only discussing everything with us. So when they call the insured, we also are insured. They call you. You have a PA. They do not discuss anything with them. Do not say a word. You tell them there's a PA and they shouldn't even be discussing anything with you, right? So we avoid that. So then they'll call us and say, hey, you know, do you know this about the insured or do you know this? I'm like, no, I don't know, but let me ask. Let me talk to the insured and I'll get you the answer, right? Yeah. And you have time to think and talk with the insured. So the insured just doesn't jump off and give them the wrong answer, the answer they want.
Now, was there some kind of legal something in place that when you represent them that says that they're not allowed to reach out to the homeowner? Like that would be like, is there like some kind of code?
No, there's so they, you know, in some states they say, well, this is funny because we work 31 states and then in some states it's more strict, in some states it's not. Sometimes it depends on the adjuster. Like, you know, we'll have one in Illinois, right? For example, two fire claims, and one adjuster says the insured tries to call the adjuster. I can't talk to you. You have a PA, right? But in the other claim, the other adjuster's calling the insured as much as he can, under, you know, behind our back.
To me, that's dangerous because when you don't know any better, like it could be, I don't know, grandma next door. And I say that not like grandma doesn't know anything, but I'm just trying to paint a picture that like, this is what you do, your bread and butter. It could be me, for Christ's sakes. It could be anybody. Well, me, I know what I'm talking about now a little bit because I got Andy gave me the salute little bit.
You have some experience without me, so yeah. I don't know.
but let's just say, right, it could be a new millennial, a new, 40, 50-year-old. Doesn't matter how old you are. This is not what you do. You work. You have a career.
Correct.
You don't know these things. You don't know the right thing to say. So I'm just painting the picture that like if the adjuster or the agent calls you, you might not know what to say. So I would feel like that's almost like that's okay for them to hey, caught you slipping, right? They said this and you said that. Like I'm just – have you faced that?
Correct. I mean, all the time they try to call the insurer. And then again, can we complain to the state or can we file 100%, right? But you're not going to waste your time and start calling. At least we don't, right? Mm-hmm. We deal with each adjuster on its own basis. If an adjuster wants to start calling and try doing stuff, hey, you do what, you know, you do what you feel is right. We're going to prep our insured. We know, you know, our insured's not going to call. He's not going to answer. He's not going to do anything. Any of our clients won't do anything. Like they know. They know.
Prepped. Good.
Yep.
Yeah. That's amazing. Oh my gosh. This is a good. So you showed us how to monetize. You told us to kind of like what's going on behind the scenes with the industry. And you told us also of how important it is to have a PA. And again, it's not that you told us. I could see it for myself, right? It's not like you're coming.
And I'm not talking about myself.
Exactly.
Any good PA, like just whatever a good PA in your area, like find one, interview him and get one on your team.
No, 100%. I'm so glad that I have you on here now being able to talk about it. We just to put a bow on this as we're listening, right? And we're not asking anyone to be a PA, right? You build a foundation, an entire career, an entire business around this. So there's tons that we can't capture on just one podcast. But if there's one thing or a couple that stand out to you that the average homeowner overlooks or typically what's a head shaker where you put a palm to your face like, oh my gosh, not this again. I think I heard you talk about timing. Is there anything that jumps out to you, Andy, that are like, gosh, please stop doing this if you're doing it? Like change the way you're thinking about things, change the way you're saying things. Is there one thing that comes to mind?
Yes. Like all the time. It's like stop talking and stop telling the insurance everything, like your whole life history. Just stop talking so much and start just listening more and being more careful, you know, and I mean more cautious, right? Have like that little antenna, like, like, you know, what are they asking me? Why are they asking me this? And, you know, be careful what you tell them. Because, again, we get all the claims that get called in that have been denied, have been, you know, are delayed for 6 months. And it's all because the wrong stuff was said. And again, we're not advocating do not lie. Don't lie. Don't false. That's illegal. But stop saying too much and using the wrong words. Because a lot of people will call a claim and say, I had a flood. I had a flood. Well, you know, you have a person taking that call for the insurance company who is, you know, 20 years old, just got hired. He doesn't know any better. He's going to say flood. Oh, that's not covered. Sorry, sir. We're not going to cover it, right? Because you used the wrong word. But you, maybe you had a soft clog.
Wow.
So,
Andy,
and people
man.
Don't, and that's it, Ruben. You said it right. People don't. If you're not in this industry, you don't know. It's a hard industry. There's a lot of moving parts to it. We'll never have the same claim. It's always something different. So if you've never been, you know, after 10 years of just running All City, and then before that, I was learning and under Herb's mentorship. After all these years, it's like there's still never anything constant. It just seems like there's always stuff changing, whether it's policy language and adjusters, what they're saying and their guidelines. So for someone that's never done this and is going to say, oh, I'm going to handle it on my own, good luck. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Andy, this is so good. I can't even tell you how like how good this information is. I got to ask you, this is a question that I get all the time. Right?
I'm thinking we're going to do part two, right?
Oh, we got to do. Actually, I have a pitch for you at the end because I want more people to know who you are. And in any way we can make it work, brother, off the air. I'm so excited for this. I've had a ball already just talking about with you, and I love the energy. I got to ask you, a lot of people who are, you know, trying to tap into the midterm rental insurance space, you know, we talk about the relocation specialists. We talk about like working with a PA. The number one question that comes up is like, where do these insurance claims happen the most, right? Because I'm like, I want to get a piece of this action, right? I don't think there's a way for you to put this. I don't think we have that kind of data. But I have the man here himself. I would love to hear, you know, if I ask you that, what your answer is to that question.
Yeah, super easy. I'll give your listeners the million-dollar answer. Obviously, relocation services is if someone has enough damage, right? A water claim and small, you're not going to find a statistic where the most, I mean, they have statistics, how many fires happen, but not in a location. Super easy, though. There's, and I'll give your listeners a tip. There's a website called IPN. It's Incident Page Network. I think it's IPN.com. If you want, I can look it up on my phone. But we use the company. We've been with them for years. And basically what they do is they'll send you messages in your area of fires. So what do? Well, you get a text message every day of all the fires that happen in the area, send them a postcard and say, we have a house ready to go. I'm just giving you a tip. If I was in the industry, what I would be doing.
Hold on.
Send a nice postcard that says, we have a house ready for you.
What is the domain? Because I'm pulling it up here and it's not popping up. So we gotta give the list.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, please, guys. This is real time.
I don't think I've ever had my phone on the.
In the lab today, brother. This is anything goes over here. This is amazing. And while you're pulling that
I will tell you. IPN. Okay, it's if you type in IPN on Google, but it's incidentpage.net. Try pulling that up. It's gonna look like this.
Net, and this is just for fires.
Yes, sir. And water pipe burst and like major losses, usually where a fire department has to be called in.
This is crazy. This website was like built in the 60s. What is this?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This is how you know you're in the right place. You have to understand,
when I started in this industry, you know, Herb was teaching me large loss, right? Like fires and working large claims. Well, how do you find out about fires? Well, you don't. We used to listen to a scanner, and we went after the fire, talked to the insurance. Because again, people don't know about public adjusters and getting help. They just think that whoever's on site is going to help them or the agent. So then we would go around and talk to people, soliciting. Like we had to. There's no way to. That's how you have to earn business, and you have to get in front of people and educate them. And so that's how I found out about the website And so now, instead of listening to a scanner, you could just, they send you a text message. Let's say you're in, you know, Indiana or you're in Atlanta, all the fires that happen in Atlanta, right? Let's just say there's five fires a day. What if one's a couple blocks away? You just drive by and talk to those. So you're not, what are you doing? You're just giving them a postcard or a business card of your services.
That's incredible. That was a huge key taker for me. And the other one too that you mentioned is going direct. I know we had Mark Simpson here in the lab with us talking about, you know, if, you know, great, leverage these other platforms, but for us, relationships building is key. And I want to echo that again, because, you know, a lot of people ask, well, how do you guarantee you're going to, there's no guarantee, but there's relationship building where if I'm in front of that gatekeeper or that source and they come to me directly, you know, that's how you're able to get in front of them. Can you give an insight as to, you know, what's the conversation you should have with your local, you know, I think you talk about restoration company. Is that what it is? Who are some other people that would give our listeners kind of an idea of how they can start thinking about building these relationships beyond just, oh yeah, let me put my Airbnb listings a minimum for 30 days. Yeah, sure, they go there, but where else could I be fostering these key relationships?
Yeah, if you have a company name and you have business cards, you know, talk to agents. Insurance agents are the first ones that get a call. Like I said, because they're usually very good friends with the client or they know them through them. So people will call their agent and the agent could say, well, I have a friend, because they always have a friend, right? So they'll have a friend. So an agent is perfect. Agent, restoration companies, especially mitigation, you know, those companies like SurfPro, SurfMaster, there's Paul David, there's just a list of them. And then there's the local ones, non-franchise ones. Those are great because they're the first ones on scene. You know, firemen, board up companies. I mean, there's a list. I mean, we could go down a list. There's so many. If you really wanted to build a name for yourself in this space, this is how you start.
Love that. Love that. Yeah. Now, I want to bring this full circle, right? You know, I always like to say this, it's the cost of not knowing something that is just, you know, is what will cost you. You give a really good case study about the 70K. What is the, you know, without putting any names out there, like,
yeah,
give us the numbers, man. Show us the money. Like, how critical, I'm going to finish with this, and how big of an impact can it, and I want to give you a plug, rightfully so, because you came in here and you give experimentation all the game. How big of a game changer can it be working with a public account, a public adjuster like yourself? Like, how much money, how much, you know, savings, you know, maybe give a few case studies that you've seen that can just so you can really plant that seed and change the paradigm shift about, oh, yeah, well, when it happens, it happens. No. You need to get one on your team. What is that for us so you can put a bow on this?
Here, I'll tell you one we just finished, and Carter's going to be making a video on this. We just finished this claim a month ago. We just had lunch with the insured. I shouldn't give his name. He's a pastor. He owns churches, and he's just a great guy in the neighborhood in Gary, Indiana, places in California. And had a fire. It was a church fire. They bought the building, but they didn't. They were remodeling it. They were going to start. You know, they were starting doing some work because they were turning the building into a church and a school. Had a fire. The insurance came out. The adjuster offered, I want to say, I think around $700,000, maybe a little bit less, right around there. He called us because he called a contractor to come and give an estimate, and the contractor told him, "Hey, I have a." PA. So then he talked to that PA. He didn't trust him. It was some guy that was for some reason. But anyways, so he found us online, called us. And when I talked to him, he told me this after the fact, that he actually thought the offer that the insurance gave him was fair. Like he was happy because that's what they paid for the building. But because, you know, he heard about the PA stuff, he's like, I'll call and get a thing. So when we came on site, I'm like, man, there is major damage here. I thought the loss would be around $1.5 million that it should have been. We actually settled it for 2.9. So just take that back. And we just finished this one. 700,000, 2.9 million. I mean, we could have charged 50%, right? the insured would still be better off. I mean, 80, 90% if we charge. If we took 90% of the money, the insured would have been better off.
Wow. I have no words.
So, and we're making a video. We're hoping to even have a video with our insured so we can put it online. But again, that's just one. I mean, we could go down the list, right? Wow. I'll be here all day, but that's kind of the service we provide. So, so when people call us, and there's sometimes we get a lot of, you know, you get calls, this is any industry, right? When you call an attorney and he says his fee and you're like, oh, that's such an expensive fee. Oh, that agent charges more than every other agent. Well, maybe that agent's really freaking good. And maybe that agent just gets you so much more that he'll cover his fee plus get you more. Everyone so always hung up on the fee and what they're going to have to pay. They're never, and those people are so small-minded. It feels like those people like will never get to the next step because they're so worried about, well, what am I going to pay? Why aren't you be worried about how much more you're going to get and how much better situation you're going to be in?
Do not be a penny wise and a dollar foolish.
No,
it's
but people do so.
But again, the people who are educated get rewarded for it, right? It's, you know, it's when you're willing to take that extra step, take that diligence, right? I you know, I have to applaud you guys who are listening to this episode right now. You're a step ahead because that's what it takes, right? Right? Not everyone's listening to this kind of information, but this is the kind of information that, you know, again, allows you to be a seasoned practitioner into the lab, into your own lab, in your world, right? And that's why, Andy, I can't thank you enough for coming and stepping into the lab. You know I'm going to ask for a part two, and any way you can engage with our community. We're just super stoked. Please tell us, Andy, you know, I know I open up the, you know, pod, just giving your firm, All City Adjusting, the plug, but you know, allcityadjusting.com. But how can the people get in touch with you or someone on your team or find out about, 100%. you know, so we can get familiar. And I'm adding all the connections right now. The number, Andy is going to be on top of the list when I need it, just in case, because it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, if you're in this for the long run, like I am. So Andy, where can the people get in touch with you?
So for your listeners, they can visit us on our website, allcityadjusting.com. If they just type in All City Adjusting on Google, even if they probably type in public adjuster near me, we'll probably come up. They could email us at info@allcityadjusting.com. But for your listeners, if someone wants to contact me directly, I'll leave it my cell. I mean, I'm still able to answer as many calls as I can. I don't get to everyone, but I'll leave them with my cell, and that's 708-655-4186. And if you want to call, I mean, that's literally my cell. So if you call there right now, that's going to go directly to me. So trying to help as many people as we can and educate and put people in the best situation. I hate seeing people get used and screwed and taken advantage. So
can't thank you enough. I that's why I appreciate you here, and we have this episode. So now there is no excuse. You got the digits. You got the
I hope some of your clients your listeners, hope they they go back that incident page. If they take a little bit of it, I mean, a little bit of that information. It's huge. It makes me think, oh, maybe I should take some of my rentals and turn them into short term.
100%. 100%. As you should. And we'll talk about that more offline. Absolutely. There's a huge opportunity. And like Andy, man, I can't thank you enough for coming on the pod. Can't thank you enough. And we'll definitely make sure we tap in to what you have to offer. And again, he gave you the number, guys. He came in here, over delivered, and experimentation. Just like that, we are out.
Experiment Nation, podcasting has changed the way we operate as real estate investors ourselves, and it can do the same for you. Podcasting has been the source of the masterclasses that we get thanks to the world-class real estate investors and practitioners and specialists that come into the lab from all realms, from short-term rentals to mid-term rentals to real estate syndications to even software as a service. Owners, founders, entrepreneurs have helped enrich our experiments by giving us the education, helping us build a network, and lastly, and most importantly, a brand association to open up multiple doors for our respective businesses. If you understand the power that podcasting can have and you know that you need one for your brand, please, you can rely on our team. InvestedTalent.com is my team and the team that helps this podcast, the Real Estate Experiment, become the fruition each and every single week to educate my community, build relationships on the air, and continue to build our brand. If you know that you need to do the same for your brand and you haven't pulled the trigger yet, maybe because you don't know how, our company, InvestedTalent.com, does the end-to-end from the time that you record, from the time that it is published, to even repurposing content on multiple social media platforms. That's what my team can do for you. Simply go to InvestedTalent.com and book a discovery call to see how my team can help you launch your podcast.